Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah!
I finished these fights.
Give me a hell yeah!
Top Rope Nation.
Learn to love it! It's the best thing going today.
What's up, guys? It's episode 160 of Top Rope Nation. Hope you guys had a great weekend. We're here to talk about kind of an interesting topic for your Monday show today. We're going to be looking back at maybe not the happiest of memories, but it should be an entertaining talk, I think. And that is when we look at what happened with WWE Extreme Rules last weekend, and we talked on our Thursday show about how that pay-per-view was largely criticized as not being a great outing from the WWE. We thought about, hey, what are the worst pay-per-view offerings in the history of this promotion? And as I started to think about it, there's quite a few of them, Kyle Ross. So, Kyle, how's it going tonight?
It's going okay. I'm ready to talk about the worst of the World Wrestling Federation. Nothing turns me on quite like that.
I mean, it's not on the surface, people saw the title of this episode and they're like, I don't know if I really want to listen to that, but I promise you it will be entertaining.
You know, hold on. I'm going to go on a rant right here. These people who are like so falsely positive can like just kiss my ass, man. Like, I mean, these people, like, there are some times I'm like, how are you seeing the positive in this, man? Whatever happened to the smarky universe of professional wrestling, man? I mean, to think that like the World Wrestling Federation, like in your lifetime has not produced absolute cow manure at times is just silliness.
Oh, it certainly has. We're going to be talking all about it. Justin Joint, I do have to say, you know, we've talked about this on the show before. We've been friends for a long time, but there was a few years there where we didn't really talk a lot. We didn't see each other around town. And then we kind of ran into each other, I think, in 2014 at a restaurant.
Brought together by Mexican food.
Hell yeah, man. What better thing to bring people together than the great that great food? And it was the best Mexican restaurant in town, by the way, and it's no longer there, which is depressing. Oh, yeah. But we just by chance ran into each other, I think, in the spring of 2014. And or maybe that's winter, I can't remember for sure. But we started like hanging out and going out for beers again and reconnecting and talking pro wrestling. And at that point in time, you know, you were a very positive fan, I remember. You didn't really want to criticize too much. You were just in it for the fun. And so to do this show with you tonight, where we're going to kind of criticize the past, it's a stark turnaround for you.
It's fun, man. I mean, come on. I mean, it's all good. Like, it's not like these pay-per-views. Well, there are some that I'll bring up that are, you know, I think are offensive, but like, it's just fun to bring up. Sometimes it's fun to talk about bad wrestling. I mean, if you can't make fun of King Mabel, what can you make fun of in life?
Also, man? I know where we're going right away there for one of the shows.
I would hope that would be on everyone's list.
Justin, I assume more of your memories as a wrestling fan are positive versus negative.
Yeah. For one, I have a crap memory to begin with. I don't dwell a lot on the bad stuff. Like if I don't enjoy it, it's probably one of the first thing that's going from my memory.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for that reason, to me, current wrestling products a lot of times is very hard to remember. you know, like when I think back of the pay-per-views of the last couple of years, if you threw out a certain pay-per-view from 2017 or 2018 or even last year, it'd be really hard for me to instantly know what the matches were on that show because a lot of times it just haven't been memorable.
I watched that Ricochet doc on the network, and I had like basically, and this was only like a year ago, and I had almost completely forgotten everything he'd done.
As we get older and we have maybe we have less space in our brains, we're not filing away as much into our long-term memories. That sounds like something Donald Trump would say, but trying to rationalize here. Yeah, you look at the shows from our youth, and I remember so much, including the bad, as we're going to get to. But yeah, current years, sometimes it's really hard to go back and remember what's been happening. So as we get into this discussion and we think about the worst pay-per-view offerings in the history of the World Wrestling Federation / WWE, I mean, these shows they've done in Saudi Arabia, if you count those have to rank towards the top for sure.
Yep.
And that's what I was referring to where, you know, it's not like a lot of these shows aren't offensive. Those you could argue the fact that they're even doing them before you get into the wrestling portion of the program is largely bad. And then on top of that, most of the shows have not been good.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a double whammy in that regard. If you go to cagematch.net, which I know is a resource you guys both use, the Saudi Arabia shows do not pull well. And you will find a lot of them near the very bottom of the list of World Wrestling Federation / WWE events all time.
Yeah, I would say, what was the one with the Goldberg Undertaker match? Super Showdown last year, 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to rank towards the bottom.
Yeah, but you know what one was the dirt worst, though? Is the one where Shane McMahon won the Best in the World tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they went to a DX versus Brothers of Destruction 30-minute atrocity.
Mm-hmm.
That was hideous. I mean, that is on the Mount Rushmore of terrible WWE shows.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone while it was going on was just like, is this just a troll job of the fan base? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah. That's real bad.
Shane McMahon, like, he came in and like just won the finals.
Was that the same one where Braun lost his cash in?
No, he had already lost. He lost to Brock Lesnar at that show, which was another terrible thing.
Mm.
So there's three horrible things about. Yeah, that is a very bad show.
And I mean, when you're looking at, and Kyle, you hinted at this a minute ago, when you're looking at older WWF shows, King of the Ring 95, widely panned as one of the bottom tier WWF pay-per-view offerings, especially, you know, of the big five offerings they had at the time when you consider Rumble and Mania and Survivor Series and SummerSlam. King of the Ring 95, you mentioned King Mabel. That was an awful pay-per-view. I don't know that I've ever really wanted to watch the whole show. I mean, I know everything that happened on it. I probably skimmed it here and there. I think the first match I ever saw from that show was, it was on the WWF. I think it was Amazing Matches Coliseum video I had in like 96 or 97. Yeah. And it had, the Bret Hart, Jerry Lawler Kiss My Foot match, which I guess was somewhat entertaining. And honestly, when you look at the card of that show, probably easily the most memorable thing that happened on that show. It is. If you look at it on Cage Match, which I have it up on my computer right now, every single match says not recommended yet. You know, where it would say a rating. Every single match on this show doesn't have the overall 1 through 10 rating for this event is a 1.34 average from the Cage Match audience. You're looking at Savio Vega and IRS, Savio Vega and Yokozuna. The Roadie, which is Road Dogg and Bob Holly.
Oh, boy, did the Road Dogg have some bad political comments on Facebook.com last week.
Kama, who is the Godfather against Shawn Michaels, a time limit draw. Mabel and The Undertaker, Savio Vega and The Roadie, the Bret Hart-Lawler match I mentioned. Mabel and Savio Vega in the King of the Ring finals, which... I guess doesn't really hold up well to if you look back at King of the Ring 93, which we did the Top Rope Nation Classic show on Patreon. Now that was a hell of a King of the Ring show with Bret Hart and Bam Bam Bigelow in the finals. You compare that to Mabel and Savio Vega, this one really doesn't hold up as well. And then the main event of the show, Bam Bam and Diesel against the $1 Million Corporation of Sid and Tatanka. Guys, yes. You know, keep this one buried on the WWE Network. It's not great.
Yes, remember, Tatanka did what his ancestors should have done all those years ago. He took the money.
Oh my God.
That was his own words. I'm not making some inappropriate joke.
He said
that when he sold out at SummerSlam 94. You steal Tatanka in a main event position. So here's the thing with this show. It's not just a 3-hour snooze fest resulting in Mabel becoming the King of the Ring. Remember, it also then sets up the main event of what is arguably the worst SummerSlam, or it would be on the short list for the worst SummerSlam. When I evaluate a pay-per-view, it's not just all about ring work. For me, that's like one of four components. It's booking, it's build, it's, you know, setting up, you know, kind of like the future of the company, or is there like any historical or future significance in that regard? And this, you know, a show like King of the Ring 95 just misses all, doesn't check any of those boxes. It's 0-4. Everyone thought going in that Shawn was going to win. And then he just like, he gets out, he's one and done in the tournament. Like, what is, you said it was a 15-minute draw. It's like with Kama, right?
Yeah.
You said, yeah. And then Brett and Lawler, it was the magic of 93 was gone by that point. It felt like Brett was just kind of being shoved off into his own universe during that period while the Clique had their way in the promotion. And the promotion as a whole suffered for it. Mm-hmm. Just a terrible show. And the Philly crowd was just unmerciful in its hatred of it. So, yeah. I think as far as big five pay-per-views go, you could make your case that's the worst one. Because as bad as like WrestleMania 9 is, it's still a WrestleMania.
Mm.
And there's just been a lot of, there's been many shows worse than WrestleMania 9 in the history of the company. I don't know what the worst Survivor Series is offhand or worst Royal Rumble, but you know, there's a certain, because those shows are positioned as big most of the time in, they're going to be better than, say, King of the Ring, or I think the other one people would point to is December to December.
Mm.
The atrocity.
06.
Masquerading as an ECW pay-per-view. That's another one I'd put on the list.
Yeah. You have one that springs to mind for you, Justin, as far as the worst pay-per-views in company history?
I mean, for me, it really, like, it's really the only pay-per-view itself that I care about is WrestleMania. So like a lot of other ones, if it's bad, to me it's just forgettable. So yeah, any of the bad WrestleManias, I don't think I've ever been more disappointed compared to how excited I was going in than WrestleMania 2000. I don't know why I was excited going into that. If you take a look at the card, yeah, I mean, that's all it was the product was hot. But yeah, I just remember I scrounged up the money. I got a bunch of buddies together and watched that, and definitely got the feeling at some point where my buddies were like, why do you watch this?
Yeah, I think for people, you know, of our age that were really into that Attitude Era, that one always ranks highly. 2000 was just such a letdown for sure. I would concur on that one.
And then like the fact that they had this huge stadium, this is supposed to be the biggest WrestleMania. I would say 32 was pretty disappointing. Considering I've talked about it a million times, I think there was a way to rearrange that card that it could have been really special.
Yeah. When you look at the rankings on Cage Match as it relates to WrestleMania, I was a little bit surprised. I guess it looks like they have WrestleMania 2 broken down based on location. But the lower WrestleMania 2 they have is the matches that happened in Uniondale, New York. But I mean, overall, I cannot rank WrestleMania 2 below WrestleMania 11. WrestleMania 11 is just such a downer of a show, especially when you think of the people that they had in the promotion at the time and how they could have reworked that show as Kyle did on a previous edition of Top Rope Nation and made WrestleMania 11 so much better than what it actually was, Kyle.
I've always been amused how much you guys like that. Like, I'm still not sure the show would have worked, but it was better.
For the listeners that didn't hear it, I mean, what do you recall just offhand what you had as the main matches if you would have rebooked that show? I'll look up right now what episode that was.
It was a Luger-Bret Hart title match with Luger going in as the champion. I would have had him turn heel and be the quote-unquote crown jewel of DiBiase's corporation. And then I had Diesel and LT teaming up against Shawn and Sid.
That's right.
It was a tag match.
Yeah.
And Undertaker working Bigelow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you guys want to hear the full conversation on, we talked about that. It was way back in April 24th of this year, episode 139, rebooking WrestleMania main events. We went through several WrestleManias, and that was a really good show. But yeah, Kyle's WrestleMania 11 rebooking and the logic behind those matches is really good stuff. So if you haven't heard it, episode 139 from April of this year.
WrestleMania 2 probably has an argument as the third or fourth worst WrestleMania. I will say that.
Yeah.
It's not good. The first six matches in terms of in-ring work, like to a modern fan, would be unheard of bad. Like, I don't even think like any of them would be over a star. It's like really bad. It just started like Paul Orndorff and Magnificent Morocco go out there for the opener. Man, they're just phoning it in, looking to collect that check, baby.
Yeah, I think, I mean, but overall, if you compare it to 11, you know, WrestleMania 2 had that Bulldogs Dream Team tag match that I really enjoy. I think that's a really good match. Beefcake and Greg Valentine, and it's, go ahead.
JYD and Tito against the Funks. Don't sleep on it. Terry Funk is determined to get that match over, man. He works his ass off in that.
Yeah. So, I mean, 11 is just, it's such a letdown as a WrestleMania. 9 is not great either. Kyle, a show that jumps out to you?
There's still WrestleManias to me. I'm trying to, like, it's funny because you guys made the point at the beginning. It's hard to remember the shows of the last 2 years. And there's got to be something in there that is just, like, honestly, Sunday's show is really down there. I mean, when you come into a show not looking forward to it and it's bad, that's like the double whammy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because again, build, booking, you're missing those checks that I talked about. The issue is though that kind of saves. I shouldn't say it's an issue. It's actually what saves a lot of these modern WWE shows is the in-ring component, right? Because you're not looking forward to these shows. The booking stinks. It doesn't really mean anything. But you watch it in a vacuum. You're like, yeah, this one match was kind of good. And for me, what we're trying to find here, it's a show where, you know, it's got no good matches. Like you mentioned with King of the Ring, nothing's recommended.
Mm.
You know, that ECW December to Dismember, nothing's recommended from that. I think the Hardys and Eminem had an okay opener. But from there, I mean, you're like talking Kevin Thorne is on that thing. There are some dogs, baby.
Well, one that in the, if you look at the history of the In Your House events, a lot of those would have like one really strong match, then a whole lot of filler for the other 2 hours of the show. The one that really gets panned is the In Your House 4 event that happened in Canada, the Great White North, as it was dubbed later on. This is in Winnipeg. Get a load of this card. We've got Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Fatu, a.k.a. Rikishi. We get the
smoking, doing it for the people. Doing it for the kids, I'm sorry.
Smoking Guns against Razor and 123 Kid. We've got Goldust and Marty Jannetty. Mabel and Yokozuna, Razor and Dean Douglas, and the main event of Bulldog against Diesel, which ends in a DQ.
Couple things. That's the pay-per-view where Shawn forfeits the title to Dean Douglas.
Yes.
Where, because he had been beaten up by the Marines, or as they were called in WWE, thugs.
Mm-hmm. In Syracuse, yes.
Yeah, I wonder what Vince's friend DJT would have to say about that kind of terminology. But that Diesel Bulldog main event is famous for Vince McMahon afterwards throwing his headset off and just berating people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Bruce Pritchard received quite the tongue lashing backstage, and Jim Cornette has told the story on his show that he immediately went back there and just apologized to Vince, even though he didn't work. He was obviously ringside managing Bulldog. He's just like, that was one of the worst pay-per-view main events I've probably ever been a part of.
Mm.
It was just awful. And it basically signaled the end of Nash's run on top, which was long over something, a move that was long overdue.
Yeah. And, you know, for different reasons, much different reasons, Over the Edge 99 cannot be looked at as a great pay-per-view because of what happened with Owen, obviously. And then nobody really wanted to work that show when they continued on. And so a whole different set of circumstances there. But
that's not, that goes to the not fun to talk about almost, you know, even along the same lines, or and probably even worse than the Super Showdown stuff.
I'm doing a show with our friend Zach Haydorn of Pro Wrestling Torch later this week, and I'll be on his show on the VIP section on the Torch, and we're looking at Steve Austin's 1999 WWF pay-per-view run. And so what I've had to do is go back and watch all of Austin's 1999 pay-per-view matches. And I got to tell you, this one I'm saving for the end. I to watch his match from that show, not going to be a pleasant experience. I don't think I have turned on Over the Edge 99 since it happened. I don't know if either of you have, but it's just one I've never been able to go back and watch, and not one that I really want to watch, but I'm going to do the historical research for this podcast that we're going to be doing later this week. But yeah, that's Kyle. Have you ever gone back and watched any of that show?
No.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They did a title change.
I know.
End of that thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and when Austin wins it back, it does the biggest number in the history of Raw.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for different reasons, that's in the history of the worst WWE pay-per-views, that has to be up there for sure too. Any others you guys wanted to throw out there for discussion's sake?
What did we think of Tuesday night in Texas?
Oh, that savage Jake Gangle saves it.
Mm. Oh, okay.
From this list. It was a really stupid idea. To be honest with you, Survivor Series 91 is a worse pay-per-view than this Tuesday in Texas, because you people can, if they've never seen that show, you can go on the network and watch right now. Almost instantly, meaning the company, makes you feel like an asshole for ordering Survivor Series 91, because they immediately start promoting the show that's going to happen a couple days later. And then they set up the show over the course of the 3 hours. They basically set up this Tuesday in Texas with the Hogan Undertaker finish. Tunney says, okay, well, Randy Savage can't work this show, but I've sanctioned him to make his return this Tuesday in San Antonio. So yeah, I mean, it's Survivor Series 91 is earlier. I said, I don't know what the worst Survivor Series, that's probably on the short list. That is a really hideous card.
Yeah.
At least from the early Survivor Series, you know, some of those, the more recent ones kind of run together for me. Didn't they was that Survivor Series or Armageddon where they were like promoting that Jeff Hardy had overdosed? Remember that atrocity? It was like 08,
I want
to say.
That's when I blocked out of my memory.
Survivor Series or an Armageddon, but like .com ran a story that Jeff Hardy had been found like unresponsive.
Yeah, that's bad. That's when I don't remember which pay-per-view it was, but yeah, that's when I tried to block out of my memory, I think.
It was the Survivor Series in Boston, whatever year that was. I can't remember if it was 07 or 08.
No. Yeah, makes sense.
I'm drawing a blank. That was, I know it won worst major show on The Observer that year.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to hit a couple other topics before we get out of here today, but before we do, we want to throw a shout-out to our friends over at BetOnline.ag. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. On the entertainment side, Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team to bring you a brand new segment, The Ice is Right. Floyd talks about all his jewelry and gives you the chance to bet on the cost of his bling to win some great prizes. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Our next topic of discussion has to do with something that I think all of us are really looking forward to at some point in time, and that's when we get live crowds back into the wrestling atmosphere. And Kyle, you had a question to pose for us to discuss tonight, and what is that question?
Okay, so I saw some back and forth about this on Twitter.com last week, it would have been a few days ago, and it's just how much is the eventual return of live crowds going to benefit WWE programming? I think we're, as you said, Ryan, so eloquently, we're all looking forward to this. WWE is certainly looking forward to it. Wrestling is made to be done in front of a live crowd. But if you watch this WWE programming, suffice to say, if you put this product in front of a live crowd, you are not curing all that ails this promotion. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's not a good product. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, not being in front of a live audience hurts. There's no disputing that. But the idea that, hey, if this was in front of a crowd, it would be so good. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, because I was going to bring up these tweets that I saw, and they I thought were very interesting and made for a good topic.
Well, I was going to throw it to Mr. Joint and what his opinion is on WWE. Do you think this will help the WWE product, or do you think it just doesn't matter?
I mean, yeah, their issues are you know, much deeper than getting a live crowd back. I mean, you could, I mean, it's like saying watch a movie in a theater and it's going to be better. I mean, if it's a shit movie, it's a shit movie. There's, you know, watching it with other people isn't going to change anything.
Yeah. I think, you know, what's interesting about this is if you would have posed this question to me back in March, or maybe said, you know, who's going to be hurt more, I would have instantly said AEW. Because that promotion felt like they had so much momentum, I think, coming out of Revolution, and their weekly television had been great. And spoiler alert, it has still been great. Go back and listen to our Thursday show and probably check out Dynamite on Wednesday night this week because they got a stacked card. But I thought, man, this is really going to hurt AEW because the crowds have been on fire. Those shows just had just such a different feel to them than the WWE shows. And I would have thought that WWE, because of their expertise in production, and you know, they got great video editors and just bells and whistles, I would have thought that they could kind of work their way around succeeding through the pandemic, and AEW was going to be screwed. But as it turns out, AEW's done a great job, and their shows without a live crowd have just had a great atmosphere about them. They've been way more exciting to watch. And WWE shows, you know, as you guys said, the creative has been terrible. And then you add on top of it how boring they feel watching it. It's just really, really tough. I do think it will help them to get a live crowd back. But again, like Justin said, if you've got shit stories, it doesn't really matter in the end. So, yeah.
And that's exactly it. It's because you could make the argument, like, you get a live crowd, then the WWE can hear the response to some of these guys that they're trying to push, like, maybe they'll know exactly what they want to do with Drew McIntyre, you know, but frankly, he's not the problem right now. It's everybody else. And you can't make that argument because AEW is doing just fine, if not, you know, better than before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Kyle.
There's an irony to this, too. What's been an issue for WWE for 5, 10 maybe even longer.
They don't listen to the crowds.
They're battling with the live audience. Live audience is booing stuff live, you know? Like, there was actually an argument at the beginning of this pandemic that, hey, with, you know, these live crowds that they're fighting maybe out of the equation, maybe WWE is going to be able to manipulate the product in a certain way where TV viewers are more receptive to the storylines. And that certainly hasn't happened. So I found these tweets. For the record. So Trevor Dame was a great follow. I think I've mentioned him on the show before. He started it with, the scary thing about WWE is even if you assume crowds will bring back some ratings, I'm not hearing a lot of, quote, this would be better if it was in front of fans, end quote, comments like other promotions are getting. I'm hearing a lot of, quote, this sucks. And then it was subtweeted by Rover, who many people follow. And he said, modern WWE, this is a great point and what really got my gears thinking. Modern WWE doesn't rely on crowd interaction. They wrestle to the camera. Few performers have catchphrases and tease their signature or finisher move to elicit fan anticipation. And then another tweet, he astutely points out, attendance at Raw TV had been falling as the show was so long and boring with too much downtime. And those are two great takes.
I mean, this is why they sign experienced independent wrestlers and send them to NXT, because they want to teach them to work to the cameras, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. There is something to it, but yeah, that's something that, like, a buddy of mine pointed out once, it's like, you know, no one plays to the crowd in WWE matches. You know, no one, if you watch old wrestling, there's no like stomping your foot to get the crowd behind you if you're the baby face.
Mm.
You know, if you're in a submission move, you just kind of like lay there and get out of it.
Right.
It's the house style is not really live audience friendly.
Yeah. You know, I think if you look at the top of the card, what they've been doing with Braun and Bray, I don't think a live crowd would help that whatsoever. I do think, to push back a little bit, I think that Drew McIntyre's run has been hurt by not having a crowd, because he was getting great responses from the crowd. You know, mm-hmm. go back to the Royal Rumble. It really sucks for him that he hasn't had that live crowd when he's been getting this world championship run. So I do think he's been hurt a little bit. I think the live crowd would be eating up what Bayley and Sasha have been doing, but at the same time, it's still been good. It's been the best thing on television. So I can't really say that it's been hurt. So I think really, yeah, the only story that they have going that's maybe been hurt is Drew's title reign. Outside of that, I don't think a live crowd would really help anything that stands out to me.
They have bigger issues. It, you know, it's not like they're put on this great show. It's like, oh my God, if this was just only in front of that audience. Like, what did we say when Matt Hardy debuted in AEW? Oh, that sucks. That couldn't have been in front of a live audience. Name a comparable WWE moment from the last 4 months. Yeah. I dare you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't.
I mean, I guess I really to your point, Drew's title win, but that match was so ho-hum and expected. I don't know.
Keith Lee's title win?
Yeah.
Keith Lee, that would have been a big deal in Full Sail. But yeah, I mean, that's NXT.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, I've seen the point made too, though, that like with NXT, since they were already filming at Full Sail in that small venue, that NXT hasn't been hurt as much, because it almost feels like you're watching the same show still, because it was always in that smaller venue versus, you know, AEW that was in the more mid-size venues once in a while, the bigger ones. And then, of course, Raw and SmackDown, they were in the big arenas. NXT, I guess visually, it hasn't been as drastic of a shift. But, of course, those fans would have been going nuts when Keith Lee had that. Yeah.
Another point you made moments ago, and it's correct, with AEW shockingly having this production edge when it comes to presenting the product with no live audience. I was watching Dynamite a few weeks ago with my wife, and she's like, is there a crowd there? Because the way they mic the performers standing around ringside, it feels like it's in a traditional wrestling atmosphere. WWE, you just feel like they're wrestling in an empty warehouse.
Yeah, even adding it hasn't made a difference.
No, it hasn't. That's what's frightening. Like, they were kind of chasing AEW's tail in that regard, and they have simply not done it as well.
Yeah.
You know, who knows if this is, I mean, I assume it's true if Stephanie McMahon said it, but did you see this interview she did today where they're talking about adding like virtual fans to the performance center? I mean, so I guess that's their next trick up the sleeve. We shall see.
That's sad. I mean, look at your rival with a year's worth of history that's hitting out of the park in this environment. You know, those shows still feel lively and fresh and exciting to watch, and they can't succeed at all. I mean, I do think they're held by the outside venue. We've talked about that a little bit on the show before. But just visually, it looks better than the Performance Center, which is such a small venue. But Jesus, I mean, my God, the amount of people they have working for this company, and they can't do anything to make it feel a little bit better.
Okay, I know The Rock's daughter got really pissed at somebody who tweeted this, because like this was weeks ago. Somebody tweeted, I can't remember who it was like, man, these fans, these quote unquote fans in the WWE audience don't behave like fans who have ever been to a wrestling show before. And Samoa Johnson like was all over him, just ripped him to shreds, and that's fine, whatever. But I kind of thought the tweet had a point. The performers they're putting in the audience for WWE shows, they just kind of make noise. It's just so transparent.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're just like, yeah, cheers. It's just, you know, and it's like, it doesn't help the story being told in the ring, right? Like, a good live reaction is accentuating what you're seeing in the ring. With WWE, it's just like they're making noise. They just have a bunch of people. They're like, yeah, just stand around and make noise for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just, if it is reflective of what's going on in the ring, okay, I guess. But it just isn't.
Yeah.
Kyle brought up his wife mentioning AW Dynamite, and that reminded me of a possible new t-shirt idea for Top Rope Nation. So we know Mark Henry is the world's strongest man. Do we need a Kyle Ross world's softest hands shirt?
Yes.
I do have soft hands.
Look at those hands. No calluses whatsoever.
Callus? That's disgusting.
We do. I do have to mention, I hardly ever hawk our merchandise on this show, so I'm going to throw it out there. There's a few new designs on our Spreadshirt store. You can find the link on topropenation.com, or you can just go to shop.spreadshirt.com/topropenation. I personally own almost every single design that's up in that store, and we have some really good, funny, cool-looking t-shirts. So check it out if you are a longtime listener of this show, or maybe you're a brand-new listener and want to rep the squad. TopRopeNation.com. You can find all the merchandise links over there. All right, guys. Well, hey, this has been a fun discussion. Like I said at the beginning of the broadcast, we were going to talk about some negative things, but...
If you're listening and have no idea what Justin said, I just celebrated my 5-year wedding anniversary. My wife was pointed out on Facebook that we were comparing softness of hands.
Yes.
I won hands down. And that's true. I do have much softer hands than my wife. I have softer feet than my wife, too, for the record.
Kyle is a beautiful man.
I don't, soft chin music.
There yeah, we go. Oh, that's a great t-shirt idea right there. I like soft that. Chin music.
I'm not a big manual labor guy. I'm not going to run from it at all. Okay, I don't like doing it.
We were talking about mowing the yard the other day, and Kyle was like, "My wife mows the yard."
Hey, no one keeps a cleaner home than me.
Oh, plus you got to stay away from those frogs. God knows what's going to happen back there.
We have a riding lawnmower, to be fair. So,
oh well, there you go.
I'm like having her like just push something across like acres of land.
Yeah, trim the land on the homestead.
To be honest with you, if we did have a push lawnmower, I still would make her do it, but that's okay.
What a heel. Always a heel. Always working the crowd. All right, guys. Well, hey, we're going to be back on Thursday morning. We'll be back on Thursday morning, as always. You can find the show at Top Rope Nation on Twitter and Instagram. We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TopRopeNationPod. By the way, subscribe on YouTube. YouTube.com/TopRopeNation. We've been posting more content over there lately as well. And then Patreon.com/TopRopeNation. You got a few days left to sign up and get yourself a Top Rope Nation t-shirt and all of our bonus content, the exclusive podcast you can only find on Patreon for just $5. Check it out, patreon.com/TopRopeNation. So with that said, I'm Ryan Drosty here for Kyle Ross and Justin Joint. Catch you guys on Thursday morning.